This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
I am Igor, as always, with Master Gardener Bob Harris here for another season of The Gardening Show.
Yeah.
Wow, thanks so much for coming in, and a little wet outside,
a little wet, yeah.
Oh, boy, I had fun in the basement last night with the wet dry vac.
Oh,
the shop vac, getting up all the puddling, and boy, it was. We've 2 days in a row we had that hailstorm.
Yeah, we didn't get it at our house that I noticed.
Oh, my, it was sideways hail 2 days in a row, almost the same time.
Oh, my gosh.
Huh. Right here. Yeah, so anyway, that's done. We're still wet outside, but that's all right. Plants need that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
As far as from what I've heard, that the plants plants enjoy the water every now and then.
They do. Yeah.
Well, good morning. And we do have on Facebook Live, facebook.com/1490WESB. We have, /WESB1075. That's
okay.
What it is. Anyway, you do a search on Facebook, you get us on there. And we have a plant on there front and center on the live video feed, and we'll talk about that in just a little bit. Bob, what's on your mind today?
I want to just start right out with that, because Mother's Day is coming up. I think that's the 11th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, next Sunday, right? Or is it two Sundays?
No,
I don't know. No.
Next Sunday, yeah.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Tomorrow's the 4th, then it's the 11th.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so it's important, and I brought in a potted plant for a reason. It's early yet, and potted plants are easier to care for this time of year, because if a cold does creep up on us, we can pick up a potted plant, whether it's a hanging basket or a pot or any kind of container, and bring it into a safer area. So that's important. That's one of the biggest reasons why potted plants are so popular for Mother's Day.
Because you can, they're transportable?
Yeah, transportable. Yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Mother's Day comes a bit early for Bradford.
Yeah.
Because it is possible, and we have seen in the past several times, that we'll still get a frost.
Oh, yeah, we'll get frost.
And so that's a reminder to a lot of gardeners, too. I know a lot of us are itching to get started, and that's okay with potted plants, but it's a little early to put any vegetable or annual in the ground. Perennials and trees and shrubs, that's okay this time of year, but the annuals vegetables, try to hold off a little longer.
Can't rush Mother Nature,
can you? That's not good for sales for greenhouses and so on, but it's just better time. So the potted plant for Mother's Day, this one is called Calibrachoa, or its common name is Million Bells. And it's become the most popular Mother's Day or hanging basket plant.
Now, this one's a lovely ketchup and mustard.
Yeah, it is. And I know made me think of, through the years, you know, used to be the petunia was the plant to get for Mother's Day. Petunia and fuchsia and even hanging geraniums. Now it's switched over to Calibrachoa or Million Bells.
And why is that, do you think?
It's just a matter of taste, and because they just are so floriferous,
yeah,
which means they have a lot of flowers and continue to flower. And they really don't need what we call deadheading, where you have to pick off the old flowers. All you got to do is take the pot and give it a little shake, and all the spent flowers will fall off, and it gives room for the new flowers to come into view that way. So real, real easy care plant. But some of the things that I think is important in any potted plant, since they are in such a confined space, they do need a little extra watering and definitely extra fertilizing, because these are annuals. Annuals have to complete their whole life cycle in one season.
Like my neighbor says, you're not here for a long time. You're here for a good time.
Yeah, okay.
So you got to make the most of them while they're here, right?
Yep. So it's extremely important that you get on a good fertilizer schedule. And that should be about every couple weeks you need to fertilize a potted plant or a hanging basket plant. And there's a lot of other ways you can do it. You know, like I prefer to just mix my fertilizer real light, less strong. If it calls for, you know, the blue powder, two of those spoonfuls in a gallon, I may only put one in. And that way I can fertilize every time I water without fearing that I'm going to over-fertilize. But then there are other ways, too, where you can just water three or four times and then on the next time fertilize it. Because, again, a lot of that water, when we water, is going to go straight through the soil because of the straight through the soil and out the bottom. So as it's doing that, it's washing out some of the old fertilizer that the plant didn't use yet. And because in potted plants, we're using a certain kind of soil that drains better that we should be using, you know, the bag soil for containers. We shouldn't be using garden soil because that can become wet and stay wet for too long of a period, and that can damage the plant. So
if the potting soil is like looser, is it?
Yeah, it's okay. Much looser and has a lot of material in it that helps drain. And you'll hear me mention this a lot through the season here. As it's draining, behind it, it's pulling oxygen in. A lot of people forget that plants need oxygen or air just as much as they need the water. They can't pull the water up through the roots and into the rest of the plant without some air there to help. So the mix for potted plants is a real light mix and aerated, so it will perform that for you. So the Calibacroa, or Million Bells, has a neat-shaped flower also. Real tubular flower.
Yeah.
That's going to help attract hummingbirds real quickly because the nectar is deep in the flower that the hummingbird is after. And it's built to reach into deep flowers. Now, also, some of the bees can reach in there with their long tongues and get the nectar and so you're helping to support the pollinators. And, you know, don't forget, not just bees are pollinators. Hummingbirds can be great pollinators, too.
I don't know if they could see this on Facebook Live, but the red ones have a nice little target for our insect friends in there, or the birds.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. A lot of flowers do that, have what we call a landing strip. It helps direct the pollinator right to where the nectar is. And, of course, as it's going for the nectar, it's picking up pollen. So then when it goes to the next plant, it's going to help fertilize that. The rhododendron is a super example of that. If you really look at the flower closely, you'll see that airport track there real clearly directing the
runway.
Yeah, the runway. That's what I was looking for. directing the pollinator right to where the nectar is so it can get in there quickly and get the pollen on it as it's going for the nectar and then pass it on to the next plant. So that's Million Bells, a real popular one. Like I say, it used to be the petunia, but now Million Bells has taken over, and you can clearly see why. It really is very, very colorful, and they just really perform well in our area.
Various colors? They're not all red
and
yellow?
Yeah, there are just about every color you can imagine, too. That's also what makes them very nice, you know. Way back in the day, petunias only came in just a half a dozen colors, but the Million Bells can come in all sorts of colors, and even spotted and striped flowers.
Polka dots.
Yeah, polka dots, yep. So it's a super plant. And then the other one, too, which kind of tickles me, also a great Mother's Day plant, is the fuchsia. Now, that one goes way back into my grandma's day, even. That was very, very popular. Now, the fuchsia, though, needs a little bit of relief from the sun. It's not a full sun plant. The Million Bells is a full sun plant. Of course, it'll still grow well and flower well in part sun. But the difference between the two, you know, is the fuchsia is going to need a little protection from the sun. So that's two good potted plants to get for Mother's Day and how to care for them.
Phone lines are open, by the way.
Oh,
We have our phones up and going, so if you'd like to give us a live call, you can do that and ask the Master Gardener anything you'd like. It's 368-WESB, 814-368-9372.
Okay, what we should be doing in our yards, of course, is the spring cleanup. Of course, it's not going to be nice to do it right now, and we all need to mow. But again, not right now. With mowing, you can cause, since the ground is real wet and soft, as you're mowing, whether it's a riding lawnmower or a push lawnmower, you can cause that ground to get compacted there, so you're making ruts in your yard.
Yeah.
And, of course, when it dries out, all of a sudden those ruts start to feel like railroad tracks. Try to stay off, you know, even if your lawn is kind of high. You may have to, at first mow, you may have to raise your mower up and to cut it the first time. But try to get out as soon as you can. And because a lot of the weeds are starting to grow too, and we want to cut them off, you know, for a lot of us, not everybody. We don't want them to flower and go to seed, which can happen quite quickly. So we want to cut those weed flowers off too, so they can't make seed, to keep our yard nice. That's going to take me to ramble on a little bit.
Why? What happened? What's wrong? Do I have too many weeds in my yard?
No,
did you see
no.
what I have going on?
No.
You're going to chastise me. All right, here we go.
Not at all. There's two fronts here of weeds in the lawn are great to help support the pollinators.
Well, in my case, you know, if there was no weeds there, I'd have like barely any green in my lawn.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Some of us are like that. And then the rest of us, you know, like to keep the weeds out, you know, so we have a nice green lawn without being broke up with the weeds. And this goes back to the beginning of lawns. At first, we used to just go out there and stomp the lawn down. I better back up even further. The lawn was created, and this is important to know, for protection around the house. We didn't want wildlife into the house or near the house. And that means rats and all kinds of bugs, ticks, mice, all those things that can destroy our home. Ants too, you know, I'm thinking of that because I've been seeing some ants around my house.
Mm.
So lawns were created as a form to protect our house. And after a while, just stomping it down, they came up with a better idea. A guy called Edwin Bunting, he worked in a carpet factory. And, of course, when they made the carpet, they had to kind of cut it level so it looked nicer, so you didn't have a long strand and a short strand. And he thought, well, geez, maybe I can use this on the lawn too. So in 1830, he took a carpet cutter out to start cutting lawns. And of course, that took off right away. And that became the first lawnmower back in 1830.
I was going to say that it would take a really long time to...
Well, yeah.
I don't know what a carpet cutter looks like in those days, but I just picture a guy with like a... some hedge trimmer looking thing.
Oh, they were pretty big machines.
and quite often
they had to be pulled by a couple humans or the horse.
Wow.
You know, and of course, over the years, they were made a little better. So now that we can do that all by ourselves, and even there's even computerized ones that'll go out there and mow for you.
Oh, my. Yeah. I looked into those. The self-mowing.
Yeah, yeah.
Battery-powered... wireless.
They're kind of neat to see in action.
Robot mowers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So some of us like to protect our house by keeping basically weed-free lawn to help keep the insects and vermin out of our homes. Others like to have a weedy lawn to help support the pollinators, and both are fine. Both are fine. I want to say more about that, but I'm getting lost here for words.
Why is that?
I don't know. I always do.
You got so much on there.
Lot of notes here.
Yeah.
But so spring cleanup. For those lawns, try to keep the leaves raked up, you know, early spring, especially in any of your evergreen shrubs where they may have collected or around your plants. You know, it's again, some of us, we like to clean them out as early as possible. Some of us will leave them because that can be home underneath those leaves for the pollinators. So you choose what you want to do there. Both are right. Both are fine. But some of us do like to clean them up, and because they can, if we have a perennial bed maybe, and the old perennials drop seeds, and we want it to drop seeds to grow new perennials, well, that leaf cover could stop those perennials from germinating those perennial seeds. So in that case, we want to clean that up to let those seeds that we want to germinate, to help them along germinating. And also, too thick of a layer on a perennial bed or even under a shrub can act as an umbrella. The leaves get quite matted, and when it rains, the rainwater will hit those leaves, and if it's on any kind of a slope nearby, it'll run off instead of going into the soil and into the root zone. But again, that's your choice, you know, whether you want to clean up or leave it there for the pollinators and the beneficial insects as a home for them until the temperatures get a steady 45 to 50 degrees. Then they'll all hatch out of the ground. Then you can clean up the leaves at that time.
Now, do you have to worry about mold growing under the leaves if you leave them there?
Yes, you do. Like just, you don't have to worry. You don't have to worry about it.
Why not?
Because it's going to be a good mold. It's what they call a mycelium. All that, if you've ever pulled up a pile of leaves, you'll see the white threads in there, and that's the mycelium from a certain fungus that is very, very beneficial to plants, and they work in a mutual relationship. And they'll connect to the roots of a plant, let's say a tree, a maple tree, with lots of mycelium growing around there. They connect to the roots. A tree will give foods and sugars to the mycelium. The mycelium or fungus will help give chemicals and water to the roots of the tree. So it's a real mutualistic, and they really can't survive without each other. So, that's not a bad fungus. That's a good fungus, that white threaded one underneath them leaves.
Great. We have to get to our sponsor.
Okay.
Worth W. Smith on board for yet another season, so thanks to them for bringing you The Gardening Show with Master Gardener Bob Harris, back in 30 on B107.5 FM and Facebook Live.
Spring has sprung. It's time to get your gardening underway with a visit to Worth W. Smith Company Hardware. Start with their big selection of garden seeds and fertilizers to grow all your favorite vegetables and flowers. Build attractive planting beds and landscape edging with railroad ties from Worth W. Smith. Dress it up with the popular black pearl mulch and add bags of landscape stone and pavers to finish it off. You'll be the envy of your neighborhood. It's time to get started. Remember, if you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
And we're back. The Gardening Show on B107.5 FM. Master Gardener Bob Harris. I'm Igor. And what else would you like to talk about today?
Some of the, you know, on the internet and everywhere else, books, magazines, you hear about a lot of these home remedies. And so I want to talk a little bit about those. But First, I want to talk about one that really does hold true to me, about the geranium story. It used to be that that was one of the first houseplants ever on Earth. There was the geranium. And I used to work in a greenhouse a long, long time ago. And I remember asking at one time, why do we put all our geraniums all over the place and not all together? And the answer was, a very, very highly respected man that knew everything about gardening said he didn't know. So
that's just how we do it.
Yeah, that's exactly what he said.
Because it's how it's done, Junior. Now stop asking questions.
That's how we've always done it, so that's how we're going to keep doing it. So I had to do some research, and come to find out, geranium is a real good insect repellent plant.
Oh.
And that's why you would spread them out here and there to help deter insects from attacking your petunias or begonias, whatever else you have there. And this is true. They even make insect repellent out of geranium oil. Some agricultural people grow huge fields of geraniums just so they can harvest them, crush them up, and make the oil, put it in a bottle, and then you can spray it on you to help deter insects. But one of the more fascinating ones for me is the Japanese beetle. We're all bothered by the Japanese beetle in our area. And the geranium is sudden death to the Japanese beetle.
Really?
Yes. And
wow.
I really prefer the white flowering one. Some geraniums have more of that oil in them than others. To me, the white blooming one has the most amount. And I've witnessed where a Japanese beetle will land on a white geranium leaf, take one bite, and instantly die.
Wow.
Now, other people will say the pink one is the one they prefer. So it's a good experiment for you if you want to try that, you know. Get a pink one and a white one, maybe a red one, see which one acts the best. Because we will have Japanese beetles again. They're just here, and they will be forever.
They're not like a once in every 4 year kind of thing?
No,
oh.
No. No, afraid not. Now, they do have their, I forget what you call it, apex, where they will have a huge amount
one
year, and then for the next few years, we'll still have them, but not a huge amount. I don't know if this year is going to be a huge amount or not. Last year, that was pretty strong, so possibly this year. It's usually around a 11-year cycles when they hit their peak.
Wow, that's weird.
Yeah. And then, of course, like all animals, they just overpopulate and start to die off. And so then the cycle starts all over again with just a few, and then the next year a few more, till it hits that peak again.
So geranium is not only repellent, but to them, they're attracted to it. They're not like repelled.
Yeah, yeah.
They think it's delicious, and then, oops, I'm dead.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Exactly.
All right.
And there's other plants out there, too, that will help deter insects. Or there's plants out there that will help attract beneficial insects. The beneficial insects are the ones that help us get rid of the bad insects. But some of the other home remedies, I know it's getting real popular with the vinegar to kill weeds. I would never do that. Vinegar is real acidic, for one thing. It's not only going to kill the weeds, it's going to kill the soil in that area, so it's going to make it difficult for anything to grow there, especially in the middle of your lawn. If you pour some vinegar on a dandelion there, well, you're going to have a bald spot for a long period of time. So they do make products that are safe to use that to kill a weed and not anything else, with no long-term effects. But vinegar is not one. Now, Epsom salts. And I still remember to this day my grandma helping plant her geraniums around. She always dug the hole and dropped some Epsom salts in there and then planted the plant and then backfilled it and watered it, thinking that that was good for the plant. Well, that too can cause a lot of damage. Number one, it's a salt, so salt will dry out the plant roots, but also it has a lot of magnesium in Epsom salts. And in our area, we don't need to add magnesium. If we get too much magnesium on a plant or in our soil, that can disrupt the other nutrients that are in the soil, make it hard for the plant to maybe draw up the potassium and nitrogen because we have an overabundance of Epsom salts, which has a overabundance of magnesium in it. So that's another one that we want to be careful of.
So no vinegar, no Epsom salt. Those are kind of old wives' tales kind
yeah,
of things.
They are.
Old kind of home remedies. That
I'm sure somebody does it all the time and swears by it. But for most of us, those are old wives' tales. Mothballs to keep the deer and the rabbits away. That one too, you know, it may work a little bit, but it's, again, not good for the soil. It can change the pH of the soil. It can change the nutrient uptake of the soil. So you'll start adding more and more fertilizer. Mothballs to keep critters away is not a real highly recommended thing to do.
So the science has become such that you get the stuff that they sell in the store. Worth W. Smith is one of them.
Yeah.
But the insect repellent, whatever that you need, the weed killer.
Yeah.
Instead of those home remedies that are hit or miss.
And yeah.
Probably that, more miss.
You know, right on down to just barriers like fencing.
Well, there you go.
You know, too. And let's see. Planting by the last full moon of the month in May. Of course, again, a lot of people will swear by it, but there is no scientific fact that holds true. So many times I've seen a frost after the last full moon in May. And then, again, there's are times when there's no more frost after the last full moon. The full moon is going to be May 12th. So that's still a bit early, so there's still a chance of a frost. The moon doesn't control our weather. It controls our tides, yeah,
mm-hmm.
And it controls maybe other things. You can ask any nurse at the hospital on a full moon. They'll be very busy, but it doesn't control the weather, and that's been scientifically proven. Caterpillar color, that's another one. That the caterpillar with the black and the reddish brown, if there's a lot of black, it's going to be a harsh winter.
Oh.
And if it's a lot of brown, it's going to be a mild winter. That's not true either. That's been proven. That all depends on the age and what the caterpillar's been feeding on. If it feeds on certain foods, it'll get a lot of black hairs.
Oh.
As it gets older, instead of turning gray, it turns black.
Brown? What you said the brown ones, though.
Yeah, they're brown on the front and the back, and then black in the center.
Okay, so the black also is for old age.
Age, yeah.
Wow, neat.
Yeah. So there's no truth to predicting the coming winter by looking at the caterpillar stripes.
I'm looking at you now, and even me, you know, getting older, if we would just turn black instead of the gray hair.
Yeah, yeah.
We'd look like pirates.
It's fun to look at and say to yourself, but yeah, science has proven that it's not true. It all has to do with what they've been eating and their age, how much black is going to be on that caterpillar.
We got about a minute left.
Okay, one last one then, the squirrels, another one. You know, the squirrel's been picking up a lot of nuts, so it's going to be a hard winter.
Oh.
That's not true either, I'm sorry to say.
Oh.
The oak tree only produces a what we call a mass crop, a lot of acorns, every 3 to 5 years, not every year. So if it's producing a mass crop, a lot of acorns, of course, there'll be a lot of squirrels. They'll be collecting a lot of nuts. Now, those years that it's not producing a mass crop or a lot of acorns, you won't see the squirrels collecting a lot of nuts because there isn't a lot of them there. And because half those nuts already have a worm in them, and the squirrels don't want that nut with a worm in, because that worm is going to eat all the, we call it the meat inside.
Mm-hmm.
So the squirrel doesn't want to store them.
All right, Bob, you're my favorite nut. I thank you for coming in.
Well, you're welcome.
Oh, I'm looking forward to another season of The Gardening Show. So we'll be back next week, 8:30, Saturday morning, as always, right here on B107.5 FM and on Facebook Live. And we will talk to you again next week right here
okay.
on B107.5. Have a great weekend.
Thanks.